Ways and Means to order and open the public hearing on House Bill 5060. Mr. Seaberg.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 5060 will be the fee ratification bill for the department. Because of a printing error, the fee ratification bill was printed in Senate Bill 197, and just to make sure that we are consistent in the way we treat fee ratification bills, we're going to be using a blank bill, 5060, to do the fee ratification bill, so you should have a copy of some amendments, which in essence is Senate Bill 197, that when we go to work session we will be inserting into Bill 5060. After I ask for the amendments, I understand that there are just a few technical adjustments, so the actual amendments you have when we go to work session won't be exactly like this, but they will be substantially the same. And again, this is the fee ratification bill to ratify fees set by the department during the interim by administrative rule.
Thank you, and I should also open for public hearing House Bill 5018, and that is the
Also at your places, you have some correspondence. We have testimony from persons who were unable to make it, wanted their testimony submitted for the record. You also have a packet of material from the department that goes over some final answers to some questions that came up last week during their budget presentation. I don't know if it's the chair's will to go over these right now or to save them toward the end if there's time while we have public testimony. But I believe the information is self-explanatory, so shouldn't be much problem.
Thank you. Stephanie, would you like to go over that with us briefly before we get started? I want those testifying to have all the information we're going to have.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Stephanie Halleck, the Director of the Department of Environmental Quality. There's a relatively thick packet of information. I'll try and get through it quickly because I know there's a number of people who are here to testify. The first item on the list is Representative Morgan had asked how much had been spent by the state on the Hawes case and also how much was in our Water Quality Attorney General budget for 0103, and to date $125,703.46 had been expended, and the amount in the budget is $237,279. There was also a question, a follow-up question with regard to a specific list of cities where there are moratoria on sewer hookups, and we have attached that specific list of cities in the packet. There was also a follow-up. Representative Morgan asked about the data collection as a result of the Biscuit Fire, and unfortunately there is no specific timeline for data collection. Our department does not have the resources at this time to collect the data. The U.S. Forest Service is interested in having the data collected, but they've not secured the resources to do so. But we'll be happy to stay in touch and let you know how, as things evolve on that. Senator Dukes had asked for a revised 30% list that was a little easier to follow, that actually had the cuts that had already been taken removed, and we have attached that as well. I'm not going to go through it item by item, but suffice to say about 50% of the a little over 50% of the cuts that were on the original 30% list have been taken. There was a question about the Powder and Burnt River basins and what was causing the decline in water quality as shown by the Oregon Water Quality Index. And it was basically a result of a decrease in flow, which had caused pollution to in the pH, the total solids, and biochemical oxygen demand, which were all strong indicators of algal growth. And I can get you more information on that, but that's all I brought today. Ending balances. Chair Meserly asked for a summary of the ending balances of other funds, and this large attachment to the packet includes that by program. The what we've tried to give you in this is a description of the beginning balance, what programs are funded by those other funds, any limitations on the use, who pays in terms of the stakeholders, and what the purpose of the ending balance would be programmatically and in terms of cash management. And if you have any specific questions about any of this, we'd be happy to try and answer them. Holly Schroeder is here with me today as well. I do think it's important to note, obviously, since these are other funds, that the folks who pay those fees are quite interested in how they're used. And I don't know where this discussion is going to go necessarily, but there would likely be others who would want to be involved in those discussions in addition to the department. We also have been diligently trying to respond to the chair's request for information about stringency comparison across states. And as we discussed last week, it's very difficult to get that kind of information. We have tried to give you some general statements in this cover memo to you. And we did find a study that was done in 1999 that I've attached in your packet with regard to the state air pollution programs and comparing those. But as I indicated in testimony last week, this really is a master's research project to go into that kind of an analysis in any great depth. And so I've brought you what I have and our best explanation of generally how programs differ across states, but to do it in any more depth would be take a considerable investment of resources at this time. So, Mr. Chair, that was very quick. I'd be happy to stop and answer questions, but I didn't want to take away from the time from all the people who've come here today. So,
appreciate that. Questions of the committee? Senator Dukes?
Quickly, just to double-check my memory, on the 30% list, number one is the first one that you will cut if, and 30 is the one you will protect, 12 or whatever?
That's right.
Thanks.
Any other questions? Thank you, Stephanie. Appreciate it. Okay, we'd like to go right into the public testimony. First of all, Representative Tomei, would you like to come forward? And Representative Dingfeller, did you wish to testify? Okay, good.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I am Representative Carolyn Tomei from House District 41, which includes Milwaukee and parts of Southeast Portland. Thank you for this opportunity to come before you today to discuss the DEQ budget and specifically the Vehicle Inspection Program. Oregon's Vehicle Inspection Program, or VIP, represents a bright spot in the overall picture of state services. It is a program run by the Department of Environmental Quality without the need for general fund money, one that has distinguished itself and has gained a national reputation for efficiency and innovation. It is a program that helps our state meet the requirements of the Federal Clean Air Act, resulting in a healthier environment for the citizens who live within its service area. I cannot comprehend why anyone would consider selling off this important state service to the private sector. Is it because we've suffered an outpouring of citizen complaints about the way DEQ operates its program? Is it because we could save money by contracting for the service? Is it because we could exercise better control over the operation if we put it in the hands of corporate executives? The answer to all these questions is an unequivocal no. Our vehicle inspection program has generated public praise both from the public here in Oregon and from other states. Complaints from citizens are rare. Moreover, the DEQ itself and the Legislative Fiscal Office have issued analytical, dispassionate reports showing that privatizing the vehicle inspection program is ill-advised, that privatizing would actually make the program more expensive. And finally, I want to stress that privatization would deprive the legislature of the direct control over the program that has resulted in superior performance. We need only look at the record of other states that have privatized their vehicle inspection programs. And please consider the example of Connecticut. The privately run program in that state has generated controversy and public mistrust over the way the government issued the contracts. It has experienced criminal fraud by employees, huge turnovers, and accelerating costs. Many in Connecticut have called for bringing the operation back under public control. Now consider New Jersey. Last year, New Jersey's Commission on Investigations issued its findings pursuant to a long-term investigation of that state's privatized vehicle inspection program. The commission reported that the privatized version of the program has cost the taxpayers approximately $590 million during the contracted period, which is $200 million more than the original projected cost. Why did this happen? It happened because of the problems that so often beset public projects run by private companies. Change orders, exorbitant expenses for non-operational items like public relations, questionable fees and markups, and an assortment of programmatic costs that the state ended up paying despite having privatized the program. Worse, the state encountered a nightmare when trying to exercise oversight of the system. The contractor hired consultants with deep ties to the political establishment to represent its interests in the executive branch and the legislature. The commission produced a confidential agreement that called explicitly for developing a political strategy on the part of the company, including well-timed political contributions. Is this what we want for Oregon? Do we want to weaken oversight and control by the legislature and build a system that runs on political favors and donations to political campaigns? Do we want the inefficiency and high employee turnover that results from the pathetically low wages that these companies pay? My West Virginia daddy would say, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Do we really want to try to tinker with a program that doesn't need fixing? I don't believe we do. I ask you to reject the ill-thought-out and potentially dangerous idea of privatizing DEQ operations. Although I'm a stalwart believer in private enterprise, and although I support strong measures to provide incentive for business and commerce in Oregon, I recognize, as most Oregonians do, that some things belong in public hands, not private hands, and among these is our well-run and efficient vehicle inspection program. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jackie Dingfelder, and I'm state representative for House District 45, which includes Northeast Portland and Maywood Park. And I think that Representative Tomei shared a lot of the same concerns that I have, and I'll just add a couple more things. I'm here to express my concern with privatization of DEQ's vehicle inspection program, and I strongly believe that DEQ should retain the job of testing exhaust emissions because the cost, my understanding is the cost will be less and the results better than if the job were contracted to a private company. And I have been researching this issue for several months. This was brought to my attention quite a few months ago, actually right before I was going to get my own vehicle inspected. And according to the information I've reviewed, it is not clear as to why we're looking at privatizing this program that's very efficiently and effectively run and delivers a service that, as Representative Tomei so duly pointed out, we hear very little complaints about. I have never heard a complaint from one of my constituents, and I also live, the district that I represent is very close to one of the vehicle inspection sites, and so there are a lot of my constituents are going very close by to the DEQ inspection site. So I have not heard one complaint in the 2 years that I've been state representative. I've also talked to the Legislative Fiscal Office, and LFO indicates that it would be unwise to privatize the vehicle inspection program at this time. And they noted in my discussions with them that privatization would mean a loss of direct control of this program and that may even cost the state more due to increased oversight responsibilities. I think that the vehicle inspection program is, as Representative Tomei noted, it's completely funded through fees, and will not help the general fund. So I do urge you to look at exploring other areas where we can actually have some cost savings. And so I thank you for your consideration and again urge you not to privatize the program at this time.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'd like to call Tom Gallagher and Dave Barrows. Is Dave in the audience? Same Dave. There you are. Too close.
Hard to miss me.
Take off my glasses, though, so you're right.
We'll call first. You go first. No, I signed up first.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom Gallagher. Here representing Schnitzer Industries and Urban Developers Coalition. I'm going to pass out my remarks so you have them, but I'll summarize them for you quite quickly. The first thing I want to say is that this budget is almost totally reliant on federal funds and fees. And I think in a lot of ways over the last 15 years that I've been doing this, the concept of polluter pays is being carried out. No objection to that. There are some significant fee increases in Senate Bill 197 and now in Senate Bill 5060-1, and my clients support those fee increases because they're necessary to run the agency. But I do want to talk a little bit about the general fund that's left. There are programs and pieces of programs in the agency that do generally good things for the community. They can't be funded out of the fees of people who are paying for their permits and paying for their staffing, and they're not going to be funded by federal funds, which are non-fungible. If you take out, as you are going to have to look very hard at, the rest of the general funds in the air and in the land use programs, you're going to have to change the statutory requirements because some of those programs aren't going to be done. So I want to make this little pitch to say that there are some programs left in the state that are both politically and practically just as important as the schools and the teachers and the benefits and the other costs that schools have. Parts of the programs, other than in the revolving fund and the orphan site fund, that are left in this budget, when you go through and make your cuts, take a look at what you're really taking out and how it can be replaced or replenished. The general fund has gone down in this budget for years. Brings me to my next point. Two of the programs, air and land use, are substantially funded by fees. The water has a lot of general fund in it that came with the salmon plan and some of the other practical pieces because they're not point source polluters that are getting permits that can be charged to pay for a lot of this. The other thing that I noticed in the budget is that the land use program has about $20 million more in it than the air and water. And I'm going to point out to you that as you do your prioritization, I think that right now air and water are a lot more important than the solid waste pieces of the land use system. Hazardous waste, the permits, fees that are paid for by the landfills, those things are going to be are paid for almost 100% by their fees. But you have two programs that we put into place in the late 80s that on a priority chart wouldn't come out as high in today's world, especially when you're taking the general fund dollars out. And the biggest one of those is the hazardous waste disposal, not the hazardous waste, the solid waste disposal fee. It's about $7 million dedicated to grants and solid waste oversight inside of the programs. And I'm suggesting to you that as you look at cutting and you look at what's important to be left in this budget, that you take a look at changing the statute, suspending the statute for 2 years as to how that money can be spent and turn it into something fungible. It's also possible you may get another flow of revenues from out-of-state dredge material and waste from out-of-state. I urge you not to dedicate that back into the solid waste, but to make that money fungible. Those are the only two pieces of money that I can see in that budget that are of any consequence that you might be able to spend back in the water program or that you might be able to spend back in these general services like the toxic use reduction program that your constituents need. A couple of other points I want to make. Be careful with the ending balances. A lot of those are 2- and 4-year fee systems that will have an ending balance. And you need to go in pretty carefully through your staff as to figure out what period of time that runs over. I notice in this budget most of the ending balances are down from their historical high, and that could be because we're spending out monies without being able to raise the fees sufficiently. Third thing I want to talk to you about, and this is something I may talk to you about more particularly, is dredge materials. And that's cleanups of the Portland Harbor and channel deepening, and that's dredge materials out of the river and out of the water that is neither hazardous waste nor solid waste. The agency right now is looking at how to classify that waste. One of the things I want to urge on you for economic development points of view is do not let this little separate waste stream become subject to another set of fees. Whether it's state fees or local government fees, this dredge material, whether it's the channel deepening or it's cleanups, those are expensive enough without having that dredge material become a fee source for somebody else. And I think that's something we're either going to have to look at substantively or perhaps in a budget note in this committee. I, too, want to add one word on the vehicle inspection program. The vehicle inspection program and its EPA approval is very important to the air quality maintenance plan, which is, again, another economic development piece. All of the industries in the Portland area, one of the few things we've got to sell right now left in the state is that we are in air quality attainment. By and large, privatizing a vehicle inspection fee shouldn't damage that. My understanding is there's a lot of oversight that is required by EPA. Under the old contracting program, where it went out to private individuals to do the inspection, there was always a loss of air quality reduction in air pollution from that program, and that means that other people are going to have to make that up. And this is the only way we can get at cars. So when you go through that program, be very careful when you're looking at it that two things don't happen to DEQ. The first one is that the feds don't ding us on the air quality program because of lack of oversight. And the second one is that DEQ is not responsible for any negativity that comes out of this. We finally got that agency back into PR black. Stephanie Halleck finally got it back into PR black. And we don't need another fight over the vehicle inspection program. The last thing I want to say is I support 196 and the fee increases with the caveat, and John Ledger's not here today, that in that bill, as part of the compromise, there was the penalties collected from the polluters in that area would go into the programs. And John Ledger rightly raises the issue that this is not a good policy, that I liken it to the Justice of the Peace in Iowa that used to collect his fees from the speeding tickets. It's not a good idea that we tie the penalties to substantive programs. But I do believe that we should keep the penalty fees in the agencies. We're not talking about a lot of money that's going to solve your school general fund problem. We are talking about some more fungible money that can be backed in somehow into this budget, as long as it's not tied directly to programs so they don't have to go out and raise another $2 million the next year in fees. The last thing I want to say is Senate Bill 467, which we just had a hearing on this morning in Senator Metzger's committee, which will come probably to this committee. I talked to all of you privately about the community solutions teams and the way that that bill is going to work, and it's going to have a significant impact down here in the budget part of the process. I thought about the DEQ piece of this, where their positions are funded by general fund, and I do believe that with staff's help and Holly's help and Stephanie's help, that we can sit down and look at some ways to bury those programs or that activity back in the base programs. I don't think fee payers are going to complain too much if they're looking for a water permit and it crosses across four agencies that part of their fees are going to pay for the DEQ staffer that's helping facilitate that process. So I think that there are ways we can accomplish 467 without raising additional revenues, or without putting more money back in the budget. But we're going to have to be very careful how we craft it into the base budget, the lean base budget that all of you are going to have to write. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Tom. Question? Senator Brooks?
Tom?
Hang on a minute. We've got a question here.
Mr. Galloway.
Leave me alone.
I was curious about one point you raised. Dredge spoils from the Columbia River belong to the state of Oregon. And as such, Division of State Lands has a fee already established for those, and the proceeds from that fee go into the Common School Fund. Are you suggesting that for projects that may come along in the future that we not charge that fee, or are you suggesting that we not add any additional fees on?
Any additional fees, Senator.
Any other questions? Thank you. Dave?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Dave Barrows, and I'm here today speaking for Chemical Waste Management, which is a subsidiary of Waste Management Incorporated. Chemical Waste Management in this state specifically owns and operates the hazardous waste disposal facility at Arlington. It employs about 45 people, and it is the only commercially available hazardous waste facility in the states of either of both Oregon and Washington. We have been a supplier of resources to the DEQ over the years. The legislature started imposing hazardous waste disposal fees with the 85 legislative session. And it is a part of the funding that goes into the hazard and solid waste program. Unfortunately, from both their perspective and ours, because of the huge decline in aluminum production in the state, and potliner was a major source of the hazardous waste we took into the facility, the amount that we now give back in collecting hazardous waste disposal fees is down quite a bit. But it's still $700,000 a biennium. And the message I want to convey, and I've given you a copy of a letter that our regional manager has submitted to the presiding officers, and speaks specifically to Senate Bill 196, but it's all, as Tom Gallagher so eloquently said, it's all wrapped together. Maintaining a delegated hazard and solid and hazardous waste program, meaning that EPA lets the state of Oregon manage the program under certain EPA guidelines, is critically important for generators of hazardous waste, for the disposal facility. It's a very critical issue for our company because we get a 10-year permit from the DEQ, and we modify that permit as needs arise and as circumstances change over the years. And it is our belief that working well with DEQ, as we have for all these years, we can make those changes in a much quicker and more economically reasonable basis by working with DEQ than it would be trying to deal with an agency in Seattle, lawyers driving back and forth and flying back and forth. And frankly, I'm not an EPA basher, but the DEQ is more responsive and they move with more alacrity. And so keeping enough funding in that program to keep it a delegated program, because there is a line, if you cut it too much, EPA will pull it back. And that would be, I think, a bad thing for not only our company, but for the many, many companies in the state that generate hazardous waste. So I hope as you do your difficult deliberations, you'll keep the delegation issue in the forefront. And that's in the middle of the second paragraph. And we'll probably be back when 196 shows up here, but I wanted to convey that today. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Dave. Any questions, Mr. Barrows? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Next, I'd like to call on Rob Douglas and Liz Wainwright.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Rob Douglas, here today representing the Oregon Food Processors Council, the Columbia River Steamship Operators, and Maritime Fire and Safety Association. With me today on my right is Liz Wainwright, Executive Director of the Maritime Fire and Safety Association. First of all, Mr. Chair, for the food processors, we would like to go on record in support of House Bill 5060, I think is the new number, which ratifies the fees which have been adopted since the last regular session. Secondly, we provided the chair and staff some language relating to the oil spill prevention and response program inside the Department of Environmental Quality. We support DEQ's role in that program. We work closely with them. The fees that are described in the document that was provided to you were fees that were not included in the legislation that you passed and helped us with last session. and we would like to see that included in the law of this session.
Thank you.
Liz can answer any questions about the vessels that are covered or anything you need to about that.
Do you want to make any statements, Liz?
No, nothing additional. I mean, we've been working with DEQ since the inception of the program.
I need your name for the record.
Oh, I'm sorry. Liz Wainwright, Executive Director, Maritime Fire and Safety Association. No, we're just, I would reiterate what Ross said, that we have worked with DEQ throughout this program, and we are supportive of this fee process.
Okay. Questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, I'd like to call Louis Pitt and Daniel
Cooper.
Thank you.
Chairman Messily, thank you again for this time. Freedom's a wonderful thing. I'm glad we're here to do business here at home. Thank you, members of the Natural Resource Subcommittee, and opportunity to support the Department of Environmental Quality's budget. My name is Louis Pitt, Jr. I'm Director of Government Affairs and Planning for the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. And I live right there on the Warm Springs Indian Reservation, and we have roughly 4,000 tribal members and other residents living there on reservation. As you are aware that we've been working with fish issues over the years, and fish are important to our people not only as food, but as a part of our way of life and religion and our fishermen and survival of our Warm Springs, Wasco, and Paiute people. The Columbia River is all important to us and depends on a lot of states, I think, doing their jobs at home, trying to keep the waters in quantity and quality clean. Our relations with salmon people have taken, I think, a terrible beating over the years. And so we've seen great many changes on the river. The dam's just a small part of it, and numbers increase and a lot of impacts to the once clean waters of the mighty Northwest. It is our duty as Indian people, given to us, these fish given to us, this water given to us by the Creator, to protect and restore both water and salmon. It is our duty, under our Treaty of 1855, the Middle Oregon Treaty of 1855 between our nations, to aid the good work and protection and restoration of water quality, which helps the fish too. DEQ is the front line on this protection of our way of life, water quality, and fish. And I'm here to support the budget for water quality and water pollution permitting. First, we urge you to support the now House Bill 5060, especially as it ratifies the fee increase for water pollution permits. These permits help protect fish and the people who eat them, protect us from poisoning. Our people, the tribal member people, there was a study done by the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission. We are in danger because we eat six times the fish than the normal residents around us. And so there's a thing of the body retaining these certain poisons, and so we're at high risk. And so we really depend on water to be clean, and therefore the fish would be clean. So passage of House Bill 5060 addresses an urgent health concern of our people. Second, we urge you to support the base general fund budget so that DEQ can complete the TMDL's total maximum daily load studies. Several basins need to have this work done, including the Deschutes and the Hood River, most of the John Day and Lake Wallula on the Columbia. The Hood, John Day, and Lake Wallula TMDLs are set for completion in the coming biennium. It is important to have closure on this work to protect fish and human health. Finally, we ask you to keep $387,000 in the budget from the general fund needed to complete the TMDL studies for the Willamette Basin. The Willamette, this river, Willamette is the correct way of saying that, is this river directly affects the salmon coming upstream to our usual and accustomed fishing station guaranteed by our treaty. Our people still fish under a treaty at Willamette Falls, and we collect eels down there too whenever the eels are running, and for us a delicacy. Thank you again for this opportunity to restore, testify on the DEQ budget on behalf of the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. Urge you to maintain DEQ's water quality funding. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry. Questions? Cooper.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Daniel Cooper. I'm Metro, the Regional Government and Area Chief Attorney. I'm here to testify solely on the vehicle inspection program. Before I start talking about that, I want to tie it into the context of what some other things Metro does. As you know, Metro is the land use and transportation planning agency for the Portland region, and we've recently approved adding over 18,000 acres to the urban growth boundary. Several thousand of those acres are designated for industrial land. Last week, LCDC, at the urging of the governor, acknowledged that the industrial, some five of those major industrial sites that we added to the urban growth boundary have already been acknowledged for compliance with the goals, and we don't believe there's going to be a further appeal to that approval. And so we're doing our best to help get the state's economy back on track and make the state of Oregon more marketable for new industry, as well as make our efforts to keep the existing industry and jobs we have in the Portland region available for the state as well, because we're all tied in this together. We also serve as part of that as the Metropolitan Planning Organization for Transportation Planning Services in the Portland region. And as part of that, we must certify to the United States Department of Transportation and EPA that the Portland region is in compliance with the Clean Air Act in order to ensure that the federal funds for transportation continue to be available. What I'm here to testify about is the role the vehicle inspection program plays in that certification. They're really the certification that we presently do, which EPA and USDOT allow us to do on a voluntary basis, is based on the existing sort of three-part program. There's a vehicle inspection plan, their DEQs, controls on existing industrial emissions, and there's the Metro land use planning, which is recognized by EPA and USDOT as a significant control on future vehicle emissions by attempting to limit the number of vehicle trips that are generated. If something happens to the vehicle inspection program so that emissions from vehicles increase, then DEQ and EPA won't have any choice but to either request the required DEQ to clamp down further on industrial emissions, or sort of will lose the compliance that we currently have. Now, I'm not here to say, I've heard speakers before say that privatization will cause you automatic problems. We're not taking a stand on that issue. We have some significant parts of our programs in solid waste that we have privatized, and it works well. I'm just here to testify to let you know the significance of what you're dealing with, how important it is to everybody's mission, and I'd urge you to be very careful in that regard. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee? Boy, I think this committee's kind of slacking here today.
You folks are getting off easy, I got to tell you. We've been drilling DEQ for the last week, so.
Maybe you burned it out.
I think so.
And I did. Having Metro come down, you didn't even shoot him. Yeah, right. Very
thankful. We're a kinder committee. Yeah.
Let's see. Mr. Hauser, Jim Hauser, and Rhett Lawrence.
You're here first.
I think you're here first.
Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jim Hauser, and my wife and I own and operate Hawthorne Auto Clinic in Southeast Portland. And I'm here today to speak about the, in particular, the vehicle inspection program, both from the perspective of its advantage to our particular business and also from the perspective of the value it adds to consumers, automotive motorists in the Portland area. I've been for several years invited to be on different advisory committees for the vehicle inspection program back when they were, well, at different times, but most recently when they were establishing the what they call the enhanced program, which, if you're familiar, it's a little more rigorous testing where the car actually is put on a dynamometer and simulates real road conditions. I was on the technician training committee. I've recently been on advisory committees for ways to reduce the number of cars that actually have to go through testing. DEQ has put together different ideas on ways to pinpoint vehicles that actually won't actually have to go through the test lanes. So I have a fairly close working relationship with the DEQ in that way. We also rely on them for different technical assistance, technical resources. If we have a vehicle that's particularly troublesome, we can call up one of the test stations, and they'll have some of their staff stay late so that we can take a vehicle over there and run it on the dynamometer and with our equipment and see if we can establish what the problem is. We have there are people on their staff that we can call with technical problems on vehicles. We've had a very, very good working relationship with vehicles with particular problems. I'll also mention we are the DEQ vehicle inspection has set up a program where they certify repair shops that meet certain standards, that have certain equipment, their technicians have met certain training standards, and it's a totally voluntary program. And we're one of the members of that. We're also certified, authorized by the state of Washington's Department of Ecology, which also has in the Vancouver area vehicle inspection that's fairly similar to Oregon's. It has a dynamometer program. Vancouver has a private contractor that runs their vehicle inspection. So we have experience with both systems, both the private contractor doing the testing and with the state of Oregon. Dramatic differences from the consumer point of view in terms of how they're treated and how the program is run. But also I can tell you there's no way that we can call the test centers over in Washington for any help on a program or on a vehicle or to get any feedback, or even if the customers lost their reports, there's no calling those people up. From the perspective of the consumers, the flexibility, DEQ throughout has had tremendous flexibility that I think would, in terms of programs that they're developing for consumers, that they wouldn't have, that flexibility that wouldn't be available if the program was privatized. For example, when they went from the old test to the enhanced test, DEQ did 6 months or more worth of testing of vehicles that they had access to because they were seeing the cars every day. And they were able to cut down EPA's recommended 200, what they call IM240, a 240-second test to a 30-second test, because they were able to see the vehicles, do comparisons between the two tests, and got EPA approval, a test that therefore was much less onerous to the consumer because of things they were able to do. Even today, they are working on what are called clean screen, various other ways to identify vehicles on the roadway that are clean enough that they won't have to go to DEQ testing. So I would say that either we should work very hard to make sure that our current vehicle inspection program is maintained by the and operated by the DEQ, or at least we're going to have sufficient oversight and sufficient involvement by DEQ that we don't lose this flexibility by going to a cast-in-stone contract. I think that's all I wanted to share.
Thank you. Appreciate your input. Questions? Thank you. Red?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Good afternoon. My name is Rhett Lawrence. I'm an environmental advocate with OSPR, the Oregon State Public Interest Research Group. We're a nonprofit, nonpartisan public interest advocacy group with more than 25,000 members across the state of Oregon. And I'm pleased to appear before you today to present testimony in favor of DEQ's budget. Obviously, our natural environment is a large part of what makes Oregon so special, and I do not think anyone would argue with the need for our state to protect our abundant natural resources. Unfortunately, having strong environmental laws can only go so far if the agencies charged with implementing and enforcing them do not have the staffing and funding necessary to do so. Sadly, that is just the predicament in which DEQ finds itself. While our state struggles with ever-mounting budget problems, our state natural resources agencies, which together account for less than 2% of the state's budget, find themselves increasingly under the gun. However, we would urge this committee and the legislature to resist the temptation to pull funds from DEQ's already insufficient budget in order to fund other programs in the state. The fact of the matter, of course, is that we need to fund all of these programs, and it's a great challenge for all of us to figure out how to do that. One DEQ program that we at OSPR have particular concerns about is water quality. As you all have no doubt heard, more than 1,000 rivers and streams in Oregon, totaling more than 15,000 miles, fail to meet the Clean Water Act's minimum standards. 11 water bodies in Oregon, including the entire main stem of the Willamette River, are under fishing advisories because the fish in them are contaminated and unsafe to eat. Even before the current budget difficulties, DEQ's ability to carry out its water programs is already dramatically short of what is needed to protect clean water in our state. As you all know, there has been a severe backlog of expired water discharge permits, and indeed Oregon leads the nation in this category. The agency simply cannot do anything about these problems without adequate funding. And I have brought with me today's petition signed by more than 3,300 Oregonians urging you to provide adequate funding for our state's clean water programs, and I will deliver those to you after the hearing. I've left them in my car. But we hope this committee will agree about the pressing need for funding these programs. One particular program that needs your support is the TMDL, or Total Maximum Daily Load program, especially as it relates to the restoration of the Willamette River. It is critically important that DEQ be given the funds to complete the Willamette TMDL program and continue their work on TMDLs for the other impaired waters around the state. Unless these TMDLs are completed, we cannot know how to repair the degraded water bodies in Oregon, so we strongly urge you to retain the general funding currently allotted for these vital programs. I also urge you to ratify the fee increases in air and water, which were passed last session, and so I support House Bill 5060. Along these lines, I also ask for your support for Senate Bill 196 and its increases in the fees for some hazardous waste generators in Oregon. You have previously heard about the declining revenues out at Arlington and the consequent need to bring in more dollars to the hazardous waste program if we are to retain our federal delegation of the program. I was a member of the work group that spent most of last year coming up with the proposals incorporated in SB 196. And though none of us was completely happy with that outcome, we all agreed that the concessions that we had made resulted in a satisfactory compromise, and so I urge your support for these fee increases. We would also urge this committee to resist the temptation to privatize the vehicle inspection program. The program has done a good job of ensuring that our state is in compliance with clean air laws, and it receives no general funding, as you know. So our position would be that since the program is working well and not costing any tax dollars, privatizing would not serve any useful purpose. Additionally, I fear that beginning to privatize our state's national environmental programs could set an unfortunate precedent, since, of course, the goal of private enterprise is typically to make money rather than to protect the environment or the public interest. So finally, I would urge this committee to consider that cutting natural resources dollars now may be penny wise but pound foolish. If our state agencies are not able to adequately protect our air, land, and water quality, we will inevitably see even greater consequences on down the road, both for public health and for the environment. It is vitally important that DEQ be given the resources it needs to protect these resources and ensure that human health and the environment are not compromised. It is not a simple matter of this legislature either funding public health or other human services programs or funding our natural resources agencies. All of these interests are intertwined, and we must make sure that they all receive the attention and the funding they so deserve. So thank you for considering my testimony. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Questions?
Thank you
very much. Next, I'd like to call Deb Elkins and Alla Elkins, please. And I assume that you're related because it's the same handwriting out here.
Is it your handwriting or mine? Good morning. Good afternoon. My name is Deb Elkins, and I'm the director of the Northwest Automotive Trades Association. My organization represents the auto repair shops, the body shops, the auto recyclers that operate here in Oregon. I'm here today to ask you that through your challenge of trying to find the appropriate funding for all the programs that all of us hope that you can preserve, we're here to ask for you to preserve the technical assistance program as much as possible. My organization has used that program to not only help businesses in Oregon come into compliance with regulations that are required of them. The technical assistance program has gone in and taken them by the hand and shown them what they needed to do to come into compliance. Number two, they helped us to put together a voluntary ecological business certification program that we have launched statewide that actually asks automotive businesses to not only meet regulations but to exceed them. And their resources helped in implementing that program first in Portland so that we could then take it statewide. And then lastly, but most importantly from our perspective, is last session you folks passed a bill that asked us to remove mercury auto switches from vehicles. And the DEQ's Technical Assistance Program has helped my organization put together this voluntary program that has asked auto repair shops to remove mercury auto switches from cars and replace them with a non-mercury auto switch. And we've been operating that program for about a year. And the only thing the DEQ really had to do for us was to work on the compliance again, making sure that when we're storing that mercury on site, we're doing it appropriately. But those requests from us do require funds and resources, and we recognize that. So we would ask that you would continue, if you can, with the technical assistance aspect of their budget. The auto recyclers were required to remove the mercury auto switches from cars before they were crushed. And they are implementing that program, and the DEQ also helped us with providing that technical assistance to educate auto recyclers on their requirement in the bill. And more importantly, looking at some unique ways in which we can dispose of that mercury properly so that it doesn't get back into the environment. So our organization has worked very closely with DEQ, and we value that relationship. So we just are here today to share that with you. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions?
For the record, my name is Al Elkins. I'm representing the Oregon Tow Truck Association. What I've found in representing the Tow Truck Association over the years is you don't have many friends representing an industry like this, and consequently, it's always nice to find some. And I have found some with the staff of the Department of Environmental Quality, DEQ, in relation to some problems that we're having in cleaning up spills on the highway, disposing of meth labs, and disposing of vehicles with contain hazardous materials. Mr. Bob Danko has agreed to sit on a work group on House Bill 3121, which is before House, which is in House Enviro, and he and some other DEQ staff will help us find a solution in resolving some of our problems. He has been very helpful over the last 2 years in these kinds of situations, so I just appreciate his support and DEQ support and coming to some rather difficult solutions in a very difficult industry. And that concludes my testimony.
Thank you all. I think we can relate to you not having many friends sometimes.
Yes, I think you can too.
Do we have any questions from the committee?
Thank you.
Senator Devlin?
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee for this opportunity. I've asked for the opportunity to come before you and speak for just a couple of moments about the DEQ inspection program, because I know that ever since probably the middle of the 90s, proposals have come forward about the potential privatization of the DEQ vehicle inspection program, which you're all very well aware of in the metropolitan area and also in Medford. What you may not know is that I spent probably hundreds of hours on this program in the 97 session when there were proposals to privatize it then. And our conclusions at that time were that if we were to privatize it, our savings would be at the most about 25 cents per inspection. We would take a number of state employees in the dozens, actually, that were full-time, that were in the lowest pay ranges of the state pay scale, but at least they were subsistence wages. They would be converted into part-time employees with no benefits, and they would probably become eligible for many programs that the state actually administers at a public cost. We also found that the system was changing dramatically and that it was best actually to keep the system dynamic so that it could respond to change. Now, I know that there have been countless proposals since 1997 to privatize the DEQ inspection programs, but I've read some of the documentation towards this, and now it appears that the privatization proposals that have come forward that would actually cost more than the public system. I don't know if they're still dependent on converting all the positions to part-time with no benefits, which is not something I think that's beneficial to our overall budget outlook in terms of keeping Oregonians employed, that there's no savings in the general fund, obviously, and no savings in other funds, and that as someone who has at least some limited experience in this area, providing services under contract and putting out RFPs for them, you lose a lot of control in terms of keeping a program dynamic so that you can make changes. You put out an RFP, and then every time you want to make a change to the program, you have to go to a change to that RFP or a change to the contract that you've developed, which makes it much more expensive in some cases. And I haven't even commented here on the fact yet that, to my knowledge, there have been no particular complaints about this program. I have one of the DEQ test stations only about 2 miles from my home. I've actually visited that station probably a dozen times over the last dozen years. I've never had any difficulties there. The staff has always been very professional. And actually, I've always felt them to be very competent. And back in 97, as I think you'll see in some of your reports that you have this year, while not every private provider has a bad history, one of the things that happens sometimes is when you take a regulatory program and you put it in the private sector, you open up the issue of fraud and you open up the issues of abuse within the system. If you're a $6.75 or $7 an hour employee, sometimes it gets to be quite a receptive thing to accept $20 or $40 to pass a car than to not pass it on the side. And I think there have been plenty of cases like that in cases where it's been privatized. I think, Mr. Chairman, it probably comes as no surprise to this committee that I'm opposed to the privatization of the DEQ vehicle inspection programs. I can tell you that I have had a few complaints over the year about the Department of Motor Vehicles, as all of you have had. I haven't had as many in recent years, but I can never recall in my 7 years in the legislature my office ever getting a complaint about the DEQ vehicle inspection program.
Representative Krieger.
I don't think many of us have had any complaints about DEQ's inspection program, but on page 13 the other day, 94%, I think the 6% complaints were about Ralph Groner, not the program.
I could understand that, Representative Krieger.
I assume, Representative Krieger, you haven't had any complaints on the inspection program in Gold Beach either.
No.
Any other questions? Thank you, Senator.
Thank you very much.
Next, I'd like to call Lynn Lundquist and Ellen Lowe. Speaker, this is a little different role.
Well, don't speak too soon.
He gets paid more money to show up here.
Mr. Chairman, Lynn Lundquist from the Oregon Business Association. To start out with, I guess confession, they said, is good for the soul, and I think I probably should do that. Sitting in your capacity on this very committee, when I was a freshman in 1995, I worked hard to get a budget note into the budget that said we should look at privatizing the vehicle emission testing program. It's all my fault. I know part of that comes from, I guess, having grown up in what I'd call Les Schwab country, where I believe that that company has been extremely successful primarily to the service that they were given. And I often looked at what areas in state government can we privatize where there's a high level of service. And so I actually got that budget note, successful in doing that, and I did some work in the interim. And I think Senator Devlin sort of told you what happened beyond that time. Having said that, I spent an hour and a half with the director of DEQ prior to the session. I've done that since the session. I spent quite a bit of time on that, not only because of the Oregon Business Association, because the businesses have a huge stake in the vehicle emission testing program. Because if we can't meet our standards, obviously, and you've already had the information today, what happens to the businesses, how they have to put in very expensive pollution control, because they're the ones that have to make up the difference. So beyond just the business standpoint of it is the fact that I guess I had a sort of a personal level in here that was I right or was I wrong? And I have come to the conclusion that I am at this point a very much a supporter of the vehicle emission testing program. I won't try to reiterate some of the reasons that have been given today, but I will tell you that I believe our business and our association have some risk involved if you were to privatize this particular program. First, I believe there's a short-term risk that would occur in the handoff. You know, Murphy Laws warns that something can go wrong. You don't often know when it is or if it will, but that is a fact of life. And if we were to move to privatization, you know, is it going to be seamless? Are we going to have any hiccups along the way, so to speak, or will there be any major problems? And the other one is, how will the public react to this? If we lose the public support for the program, it's no different than any other program. That's the foundation of it. And I think we'd be very careful that we don't shake the trust of the public. Secondly, I think there's a risk to the program's ability to deliver clean air over the long term. I'm not a technology person in this area, but I do know, as you do, that car technology is changing very rapidly over time. And I think Senator Devlin made a very pertinent point when he said that if you're on a contracted basis and then changes come along, you have to go back and renegotiate your contract and how you're going to implement the program. And I think that's a very worthwhile point to consider. If my information is correct, DEQ was one of the first ones in the country to upgrade to a new emission test that taps a car's onboard computer. Most other states don't do that yet, and that simply is efficiency in the process. I think I would just like to sum it up by saying this. As most of you know that know me personally, I've always been an initiator of looking at ways we can improve the process. And certainly, if we can privatize, I'm all for it. But I think we have to look at the risk and reward. And being in the ranching industry, as a good chairman is, and my wife often said, the high risk in farming, let's go to Reno for the weekend so we sort of minimize our risk. I think we work with that every day. And the rewards of this program, in contrast to the risks that I think you will take if you privatize it, I just don't believe are merit the change. And so, you know, I can't say that these things would or wouldn't happen. How do we know? But you've already heard testimony about the cost, private versus public. I think it's fairly well substantiated that there won't be significant, if anything, a higher cost involved in it. And I'll just finalize by saying this. When you have a program that has a heavy regulatory approach to it, that is one, in my opinion, one of the more difficult ones to privatize. It's just different than a DMV or something like that. But certainly there is a heavy regulatory approach to this, and I think rightfully so, for the good of all of our Oregonians and good of the business community when we think about clean air. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you, Lynn.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm Ellen Lowe, and I appear today as on behalf of Columbia Willamette United Way. Our four-county United Way seeks to be part of the safety net for people with immediate needs, as well as investing in four priorities that are structured to provide long-term solutions for our shared community. And those include promoting health and safety, getting people involved in their neighborhoods and communities, helping people live independently and with dignity. And today I'm here to talk about the Clean Air Partners pilot, a 6 to 8 month pilot, which we hope to get underway next month. And this is with the DEQ Vehicle Inspection Program, because it offers a program, a partnership, that is consistent with our priorities. It meets the immediate needs of many Oregonians, as well as being supportive of their move out of immediate crisis toward less dependency. Now, the car repair program is really in many ways going to be similar to the HEAT program, in which Oregonians in our Tri-County area will be given the opportunity to make donations at the DEQ vehicle inspection stations. There will also be mail-in envelopes, and it's to help low-income Oregonians meet the costs of getting their vehicles in compliance. There are about 750,000 vehicles that are tested annually in the Portland metropolitan area. 2,700 fail, and it's estimated that about 400 of them, the folks are unable to come up with the costs of providing the needed repairs. So the hope is that this program will be one that will assist them in doing so. United Way really welcomes the invitation of DEQ, and I think I'd like to give some emphasis to that these are folks who work for DEQ, who noted the need, and so came to some of us to participate with them in this very creative public-private, not-for-profit initiative that provides an invitation for broad-based community financial participation in cleaning our air and responding to the transportation needs of our lowest income neighbors. United Way is not unmindful of the relationship of a cleaner airshed to the growth of our economy and therefore the growth of employment opportunities for the low income. In the recent 2-year assessment that we did of community needs, transportation did not go unnoticed. For many of our low income residents have non-traditional work shifts. They may have several part-time jobs and multiple child care arrangements that make public transportation less responsive to their needs. And for those seeking employment, often employment centers are very far removed from affordable housing. The family car can be essential to maintaining the family. And for some of my contemporaries, replacing an aging auto is out of the question. But a maintenance assist could facilitate continuing trips for essential goods and services. And another benefit for the low income will be the efficiency that car maintenance offers them. The Clean Air Partner Program can facilitate these very critical supports. Now, at United Way, we commit our resources to actively participate in program outreach, education, promotion, and publicity. And the depositing of funds, maintenance of a running account of donated funds, and preparation of receipts will be the responsibility of the United Way. United Way of the Columbia Willamette, with its community partners, is proud to work with the DEQ Vehicle Inspection Program to assist Clean Air Partners achieve its goals, cleaner air and reliable transportation. And I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Wolf. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Asking Ms. Lowe a potentially negative question pains me. It's like stomping on bunnies. So, Ellen, I know you know this comes with a good heart.
Yeah.
This is a very unusual model. And I guess my question from a policy perspective is that if DEQ forms this kind of a partnership with United Way, why not other agencies that are not-for-profit that also have the similar ends to United Way? Where do you draw the line? Dornbecker right now, for example, is taking a lot of uncompensated care. Why shouldn't they be allowed to participate? Or a shelter, why shouldn't they be allowed to participate? Why United Way?
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, I think what you will find is that United Way in many ways is the umbrella organization. And so we will be doing all the recording, but the 89 partner agencies of United Way will be very directly involved in the outreach, the publicity, the making information available to the folks who come to them. And in addition to the 89 partner agencies, because of the way the funding goes, it must be about 1,000 now of these other kinds of groups that work with us. And so United Way, it's to centralize the accounting, that kind of it. But the outreach, if it's going to work, has to involve everyone that is providing service to low income, and the federal poverty level, it's my understanding, is going to be the guideline.
Well, I appreciate and believe your answer with respect to that. Make me the case for why Tonkin Motors was selected versus Bob Lamphere or Scott Thomason. How was that election made?
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, DEQ will have to give you the answer on that. I can tell you that Tonkin Motors has, they have committed to reducing the cost of the labor 25%. The cost of the parts will also be at their cost rather than retail, but the Department of Environmental Quality will need to answer the selection process for the actual repair arm. Our arm is for the outreach and making sure that we let low-income folks know about its availability.
One last follow-up, and again, I think this is a very innovative, and perhaps it's its newness and its departure from business as usual that it engenders these questions. I would be curious to know from DEQ what kind of audit trail they would have through the dealership, and I don't care whether it's Tonkin or any of them, but if, in fact, work is ostensibly being funneled to one shop, regardless of whose shop it is, there may be some kind of a public trust requirement to audit that, in fact, the part was sold at 25% of retail, or that work was performed at a discount, just to make sure that there isn't a temptation with a steady stream of referral into their shop to not live up to every aspect of the deal.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I would have to defer the answer. I would add that it is a 6 to 8 month pilot project.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. Next, I'd like to call Ms. Simpson and Ralph Gruner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, especially Representative Krieger and his kind remarks. Thank you very much. I'm Ralph Groner with AASME, but at this time, before I make comment, I'd like to introduce Issa Simpson, who would like to make a few words. She's an officer of AASME's local, and she took the day off with no pay to be here to testify today, so she'd like to make a few comments.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, I'm an officer and a steward for Local 3336, and I did take the day off from work to be here. I am an officer and a steward, but I also...
Excuse me, I do need you to give your name to the
record.
Oh,
I'm sorry. Issa Simpson. Thank you. I am also a former employee of the Vehicle Inspection Program, and so some of the comments I make may seem pretty familiar with it, and I am. The Vehicle Inspection Program has increased its services pretty significantly over the years, specifically over the last 10 years, to include DMV services, new test procedures, the inspectors, and I'm here to speak primarily on behalf of our members at the stations. You've heard a lot of the other services and the innovations that VIP has made, and our members are the people that are actually implementing those in the lanes. Those are the people that most of you are familiar with and that give the face to DEQ for most of the population of the Portland metro area and in Medford. While these innovations have been made and while we have continued to improve services, the type of service that people expect and do get at the stations has made DEQ vehicle inspection stations one of the most customer-friendly public entities that there is in Oregon. The VETs are paid at the very low end of public employee salary scales, yet every day they are out in the lanes and they are personable and friendly and professional and helpful to customers and the public. I can't address the specifics of what Ms. Lowe was just speaking about, but what I can tell you is that the way that an occurrence where we would notice a situation that low-income people needed additional assistance would be that an inspector would bring it to our attention that here is an older person whose vehicle does not pass, who needs help. Is there any way that you can help them? And they would make a call to our office or ask their manager to take note of that. And that would be taken to our management through our phone lines. And those are the ways that those things are brought to our attention and they are followed through on. The public is responded to at the vehicle inspection program. I can assure you that you will not find that in contracted programs in other states. We have something to be proud of here. Our members have something to be proud of in the way that they serve Oregon in the stations. At a time when their wages are low and times are uncertain for everyone, their level of service has not changed at all. I continue to hear from them concerns about customer service and how they can continue to give that customer service even when they're concerned about their own jobs. So that is something that you will not find in a contractor-run company. I think that one thing that does do for us, too, on a broader level in Oregon is it gives the public a perception of public employees that is only good for all of us. This is a regulated area. This is something that we have to have in Oregon. And to be able to put service out there in a way that, indeed, to use the word again, where people walk away feeling that they're partners, not that they have just been told exactly what they need to do, how they're going to do it, and go away now. They are made to feel partners. The vehicle inspection program goes above and beyond what is required by law, and they do that within the fee that is set for them and continue to be able to put money away to improve on that program to make it more accessible for the public in Oregon. And I can also say that I have heard comments that some contractors would tell you that they would be able to retain staff from the vehicle inspection program if they were to come into Oregon. And I can tell you that I can't think of one member that I have communications with that would be able to work for $8 an hour and support their families and provide for them. We have a number of single-parent family members who work at the stations who have worked there for years, and they would not be able to, nor would they choose to. And the type of work that it calls for, this is not pumping gas. There are a number of job requirements that they have to meet. There are three different types of tests. There is driver and motor vehicle registrations, and at some stations we have VIN inspections. We provide services that DMV usually provides at their stations, at their field stations, which lessens the workload on their field work. I guess in closing, I just want to say that, again, everything that you've heard from other people who've been up here, I can say that from the inside there was a mandate from management and a willingness from everyone, from the stations on up, to provide the best customer service and the best level of service that we possibly could at the stations. I have nothing but respect for that program. So thank you for your time.
Might you tell them about these?
Oh, thanks. These are customer service cards that we have asked to copy that came from the stations. They are cards that customers are asked to fill out to tell what their perception of the level of service that they were provided at the stations was. And there's a ranking from 1 to 5 for various areas of service. Overwhelmingly, they are wonderful reports. You can ask for negative ones if you'd like, and they're a much, much smaller stack that we've been amazed at the level of support people have given through those cards.
Have you provided this to the department, the documentation? Because we have asked for surveys as to the level of service. So.
The Department of Environmental Quality Vehicle Inspection Program has actually implemented these at the stations. We, the union, asked for copies of these, so those are available.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I won't take very long because I handed you written testimony, which I think for me is a first. I really don't like doing that because I like to just kind of talk to folks, but the comments I make on the Ask Me sheet, vehicle inspection is a key factor. I can skip over all of that because you can read it, and you've talked about that. One of the concerns I've had is the question of good government policy. And I recall serving here when we created DEQ in 1973 and the vehicle inspection program, and I had questions at that time, primarily political, because I had constituents in Clackamas County who did not want to be, and understandably, in the vehicle inspection program. Matter of fact, many of them still aren't in the rural parts of our county. But now I look at it more as what is good government policy and what is not. And I don't believe, and I don't mean this in a negative way, but I personally have spent a lot of time on the issue of privatization of DEQ in the last few years, and I'm saying that nicely. None of you really were. I go all the way back to when we won on the floor, and I got to the interim committee, and the president of the Senate, who's a friend of mine, came down and said, well, we're going to keep the temps, and part of our staff were permanent, part were temps. It ended up with our turnover rate with the temporaries, and I want to thank you last session that it wasn't good policy. Where I probably differ from most folks, although I represent and I work for, these are my bosses, and they pay my salary, so you could say I have a conflict of interest. But I also have 30 years in the government arena and budgets, and I can tell you that I'm fairly conservative compared to most people who work in unions in a lot of ways. At least the union folks think I am downstairs. And I don't know, if I ask DEQ a question, what have we spent in dollars on working on the privatization, and that number you all have on the second page, we would have had 225,000, and a result of this, basically all innovations were put on hold, innovations that would have resulted in customer service improvements to the people in my area where I live. We couldn't purchase the equipment for lane modifications to speed up testing. We couldn't secure leases for onboard diagnostics. Only stations were delayed a year. And rules allowed us to implement self-service test lanes, clean screening, and remote onboard diagnostics were delayed by 1.5 years. I just am one who doesn't believe we need to study more and cost the people that live in the four-county area more, including Representative Johnson's area. We don't want either an unfair process that favors one bidder. As you read in the book, if I've re-given you another book, every one of you, you'll see that Gordon Darby made quotes that were complimentary about DEQ. And so basically we're talking ESP, but that RFP is dead. They failed to meet the minimum requirements of the RFP. And I'm one who doesn't believe that good government means, as ESP has done in the book, not by me, but off the Internet, in this country, in state after state, temporary employees, minimum wages, and high turnover, and the resultant complaints by the public in a program that receives good ratings not only by business, but the citizens in our Tri-County area. I also would like to say I have never seen privatization of DEQ vehicle inspectors come from people who really live in that area. We're happy with our service. So I believe it's been studied enough. I'm also one who believes privatization doesn't provide good government if, in fact, employees, and I have a lot of experience with this since we also represent my union, private nonprofit contractors that deal with the MRDD. Mental retardation, developmental disability. And I went to give you a story analogous to this. I went over to Astoria to door-to-door on internal organizing about 6 months ago, and I could not believe what the mothers who worked in those group homes told me at minimum wage with 3 children living usually in run-down mobile homes, that in fact their children were on the Oregon Health Plan because the only thing that was covered was the employee themselves under where they worked, and usually that was about 50% coverage. I do want to say that when Senator Devlin made that very generic question, what I would say is that usually what we're talking about when we hire transitional temporary employees on lower wages, and heaven knows our wages aren't high, the average is $13 per hour, that the fact of the matter is what we end up doing is using taxpayer-supported subsidized programs, including the health plan and other programs. So if that sounds like union talk, it is. That's who I represent, but that's how I feel, and we would appreciate ending this, I believe, unnecessary and needless attempt to privatize our vehicle inspection program. Thank you.
Thank you, Ralph. Questions? Thank you.
Next, I'd like to call Matt Blevins and Willie Tiffany. And is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify that has not had the opportunity to sign up?
We want to be notified the next time he's in Astoria.
Chair Messalini,
heard about it after he was there.
Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Matt Blevins. I'm Legislative Affairs Director with the Oregon Environmental Council. I won't read to you my testimony, as you can do that yourself, but I wanted to touch on a couple key points that I wanted to make. First off, OEC supports Senate Bill 5018. We obviously support adequate funding for the Department of Environmental Quality. We also support ratifying the fees from last session. And we oppose transferring or privatizing the inspection program. So we can obviously talk further about that, and we probably will over the coming months. But the bigger points that I wanted to make were that I think that this is obviously a pretty important time, both for the Department of Environmental Quality, but also for agencies generally. I think that everybody is trying to figure out what are the priorities and where do we go from here. But I think that we should remember in this committee that just as important as it is to remember that you can't put a child's education on hold, or you can't just put an elderly person's needs on hold, or somebody who needs prescription drugs on hold, you can't also put on hold the problems that we face with the environment here in Oregon. Those problems are still there, and we still have a lot of challenges here in Oregon. I think a couple of things that I would just highlight are that as of 1999, 10% of Oregonians served by the public water systems received water that failed to meet the state's benchmark for safe drinking water, and a total of just under 1,600 water systems violated the Safe Drinking Water Act at least once. 21 toxic air pollutants, including benzene and formaldehyde, are present in Oregon's air and above safe levels, according to the Environmental Protection Agency's National Air Toxics Assessment. And there's a variety of other problems that you've heard about with the Willamette and the other river systems that we have here in the state. Those problems aren't going to go away. They're just going to continue to grow unless we take proactive steps to deal with that. And so, you know, the Department of Environmental Quality has done a lot of that work. We're progressing in the right direction. There's obviously more that we need to do. But if we step back now, we're going to have an even worse problem down the road. And so I think that it's key to remember that when we're looking at the budget discussion here and trying to make a decision of where to go, that the opportunity to remove general fund support for the Department of Environmental Quality and other departments may be tempting. There may be pressure from other committees and other members of the General Ways and Means Committee to do that, but I would ask the committee to hold firm in protecting these budgets. The natural resource budgets make up only about less than 2% of the overall general fund in the budget, and you could take all that money and put it into to human services or education or the other budgets that are out there, and they wouldn't make a dent in the bigger problems that we're facing this session. But they would devastate these programs and make us all down the line really regret what we have done. So I know that all of you recognize this, but I want to reemphasize that there's some real challenges here, but there's also some real opportunities, and we think that you all can make some good choices about where we go and find some ways to provide the funding that we need in this budget and others to protect the programs to protect Oregon's environment. So we'd encourage you to look at fees where they're available. We are obviously already fund the Department of Environmental Quality through an extensive number of fees. We would encourage you to look at places where we can expand and increase those fees where it's appropriate, building on the polluter pays principle, and to look for ways that we can expedite services in a way that is cost effective. So with that, I'll close and just encourage the committee to continue to look for ways to protect the Department of Environmental Quality budget, provide the services that the state and the citizens count on, and make sure that we have clean air and water for our generation and for generations to come. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Willie Tiffany with the League of Oregon Cities, and we represent all the cities in the state of Oregon. Being at the end of your list, I'll try to be very brief, as many of the issues have been covered. But I would like to focus on four areas within the water quality budget that we do support. One of those is the TMDL program. You've heard a lot about the TMDL program, not only last week, but also today. And we do support DEQ's budget for all those reasons that you did hear today, but I would like to also put an economic development spin on the TMDL budget as well. Within cities and communities across the state, there is a large degree of uncertainty about infrastructure investments and providing certainty for the industrial community that we serve in cities. Without those TMDLs established and those load allocations, we can't provide that certainty for the industrial community or our ratepayers. So that's just a little different tinge in the TMDL situation, but we do support the department's budget for that program. Also, you haven't heard today about the department's stormwater program. Mr. Llewellyn gave you an overview of the Phase 2 program and the Phase 1 program last week. Communities across the state do have today and are going to have in the future permits, MPDS permits, to manage all stormwater within their communities. Last fall, the E-Board approved a request for 2.5 FTE paid for through fees off those permits, which are charged to municipalities, to fund that program. That's also within this budget, and I just wanted to let the committee know that municipalities across the state do support fees for that program. We'd sure like to see that program expanded, and possibly in the future we could work on that, but given our economic situation,
We support the program as it is today. Thirdly, the Community Solutions Team and the Environmental Partnerships for Oregon Communities programs have been touched on again today. We're very supportive of the Community Solutions Team approach. I know a number of committee members here and other members have expressed concern about the core mission of the community solution agencies and incorporating the CST approach in their core functions. As expressed earlier, EEQ is a little different as it has very dedicated funding sources through fees or federal funds. I'm not here today to request restoration of the general fund, but a similar request to Mr. Gallagher's that maybe this committee, through either a budget note or through the budget itself, could look at expanding flexibility within the core program so that the department can continue to perform those functions. Many decisions, economic development decisions, cannot be made across the state if DEQ is not involved. They are the lead permitting agency for water issues, and it's very important that they're at the table. As far as the Environmental Partnerships for Oregon Communities, this is a very effective program that was also cut for the remainder of this biennium. It helps the very smallest communities across the state deal with compliance issues, both political issues at the local level as well as regulatory issues. And in fact, looking at this committee's jurisdiction, probably they've helped a community in each one of your districts. And again, we would ask for flexibility within the base program to continue that support. And then lastly, we also support 5061, the -1 amendments, which is the ratification of the fees from last session. We agreed to those fees last session, commend the director and the department on implementing that program. We have paid the fees in the last biennium, and we support, again, ratifying them in this biennium. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Willie, any questions, committee? Thank you very much. Next, I'd like to call Kristen Mitchell.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for letting me testify. I'm Kristen Mitchell. I'm the Governmental Affairs Director for the Oregon Refuse and Recycling Association. We're a statewide trade association that represents garbage and recycling collectors and landfills, transfer stations, material recovery facilities, and some composters. I actually wasn't prepared to testify today, but I understand that my friend, Mr. Gallagher, did testify and suggested some potential ways to do some funding that I thought I probably should respond to at least briefly. Our position as an association is that the fees that we pay should go to the programs for which they are raised. If solid waste is, as he has suggested, no longer such a priority as it was in the past, then our suggestion would be to cut the fee, don't use it to support other programs. And I would imagine that those programs that are searching for funding would feel the same way if the solid waste section suggested that they should be paying for the programs that we have. There's not really a nexus between the solid waste fund and those of the other air and water at the DEQ. It's a dedicated fee. We have some solid waste businesses that are also subject to air and water permit requirements, and they pay those fees accordingly. I understand there was a number of in the range of $7 million tossed out as being able to support other programs, and I'm not sure exactly how I came to that number. I think it's a combination of the portion of the tip fee that's used to pay for recycling reuse programs and also a portion of the tip fee that goes for orphan site funding should the orphan site fund need to be used again. But the solid waste program has had stable funding, but we've also heard suggestions that as growth occurs and time goes on, there's going to be the possibility that we'll be asked to support additional fee increases in that program just for the solid waste fund, not in this biennium, potentially in the next one. And we aren't always at the forefront of recommending that fee increases are necessary, but if those fee increases are going to occur, we prefer that they occur for the programs that we pay for. The tip fee is adequate for the solid waste program, but it wasn't designed to support the entire DEQ program. The idea that you can suspend the statute mandating a high level of recycling and use the money for 2 years to bridge the costs is that the solid waste system users would continue to pay the same fee and have all of those funds shifted to other programs. And I think there's some kind of a slogan there that I don't like so much. It's kind of like all of the fee, none of the service. What happens to the staff and the program elements in the solid waste section during that two-year period while the funds have been shifted? I don't know how those would continue to be funded. What would happen with the programs there? We're on the ground out there providing services currently. We can't just start and stop programs. The fee doesn't go to our programs, but it is supporting the programs that come back and help us as we try and reach the statewide goal of 50% waste reduction by the year 2009. So I just urge you to consider this when you consider making a fee change of this nature. And I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Questions? No questions. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Is there anyone else in the audience who'd like to testify today? You're my last. I have a couple of questions and clarifications. Mr. Groner, in your packet there was one notice from Oregon Auto Dealers. Would you like to come back up to the mic and explain why that's in there?
Yes, for the record, Ralph Groner representing AsME. The letter, I'm sorry, I totally skipped my package to just expedite myself. I meant to say that the auto dealers just gave me the letter, and even though that went toward another bill, it did comment on, if I can find it, it did comment customer service attitude of the DQ, the last paragraph, vehicle inspection. They were talking about Senate Bill 197, but I included it only to the extent that the vehicle inspection program, how they've worked with the auto dealers, third to the last, as well as their customer service attitude. That was all. I skipped my entire package, or I would have gotten to that.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks. And I'd like to ask Stephanie Hollick to come back up, please. I have a question. Thank you, Stephanie. I'm looking at the information you handed out as to the jurisdictions that have restrictions on their hookups for septic or waste systems. And I just, this is not going to sound right, but let me get word of that, I guess. In the first three categories, there's 12 different jurisdictions. And I note that six of them are in Ripson and Craigers district, four of them are in my Senate district, and it seems to me that those problems are really localized on the southern Oregon coast. Could you give us some background on that?
Mr. Chair, for the record, Stephanie Hallock, the director of DEQ. I'd have to do a little bit more research to find out the history of when these facilities were constructed and why they all seem to run into a problem at the same time. I do think some of the problems on the coast that I'll have to tell you about have to do with the weather conditions and topography and that sort of thing. So as to why there would be more there, as in eastern Oregon, for example, I couldn't tell you without doing a little bit of research, but that would be my guess as one contributing factor. The other thing about what happens here is, and we tried to reflect these by putting them in different categories, is sometimes communities themselves will decide to impose the moratorium for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is it can, if you will, drive the community to pass bonds sometimes to fund the upgrades that are needed. In larger cities like Portland, Salem, Albany, they're under orders from DEQ to do the same kind of upgrade, but they've, in fact, already passed their bonds or done whatever they needed to do to get the funding. So now we're just in a situation of having to have them on a compliance schedule to actually fulfill the requirements of the order. So those are both different tools, one when their funding has been found and in some cases when there hasn't been. I will check with my staff and find out if there's anything inherently different in the communities on the east side of the mountains or the central part of the state as to why it seems to be so heavily focused on the coast. But my guess would just be the coastal conditions contributing to that in some way.
And I would guess part of it's the economy. And they just have difficulty funding projects as well as the amount of wetlands and water bodies. But I just...
apologize for putting you on the spot, but I looked at that and thought, this is so significant that it's just like a big red flag to me.
Mr. Chair, I totally agree with that, and I do recall in my previous testimony, I think in the work my staff did, they indicated that we had done a study in 2000 that said statewide there were 59 communities that had systems that needed upgrading and to a total price tag of about $1.5 billion. So I'm sure there are other communities that have needs as well, and how those are being handled I can look into a little further.
Thank you. Representative Krieger.
Chairman Redley, Stephanie, you and I had a conversation 6 weeks ago regarding Portland, and you and I had a kind of a resolution of that because you've worked with these communities, but I think it needs to be a public record that the entire state of Oregon doesn't dump the sewage that Portland does.
Make your point. You did make your point. Thank you very much, Stephanie. Appreciate it very much, your coming forward. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing. And staff, is there any announcements to make in preparation for tomorrow?
Just that next week you will be starting the Water Resource Department budget. Excuse me, tomorrow. That's tomorrow.
And what are we doing?
I believe all next week is Water Resource Department. I think so. Those 3 days. I'm not sure if it goes this week. I'm not sure if it goes in Monday next week. So.
Why do you keep saying next week?
Thank
you. We better close our meeting.
We just got started on this week.